Well, back at you, another hour of stunning radio here as we talk next about Coral Castle. This is truly an incredible story. Stand by for that. Joe, now the story, the incredible story of Coral Castle. Ed Leitz-Kallman. Tell me your interest beyond that. Did you simply see this on In Search Of and you got all excited about it or what?
Yes, George. The first time, of course, as a child, I had been fascinated by the pyramid Stonehenge, like you. You know, we talked about it. I loved them. The first time I saw In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy, and here was a person who actually had solved the secret of Stonehenge, the pyramids, the Mayans, and it was in Florida, George. Here again, I was ignorant, never heard of it, and I thought, It can't be. It's got to be just a pile of rocks. I flew down the next weekend. It was on a Friday night. I remember to forget it. I drove down the next Saturday morning to Coral Castle. And what I found there, George, was a place that it looked just like Ed could have left it yesterday.
Was it awe-inspiring when you were down there?
George, there's a feeling when you go in there, and it's very difficult to describe, but those huge gray stones, you're surrounded by this, it's like a children's playground with, you know, 3-ton revolving doors and gates, all these rocking chairs that are balanced perfectly. It just looks like something that can't be possible there, and you feel a tingling. There is a magnetic presence there, and you can feel it. You feel more energized, and there's a chair on the throne room there. One of the little girls who used to play there when she was a child told me Ed used to bring her there. He loved children, and he said, "Honey, sit in this chair here, and you'll never be sick." She said she could be tired from playing outside, George. She'd go in, sit in this chair 15 minutes, get up, run back out, and play again. That lady's still alive. She's like 92, I believe.
Isn't that amazing? How did he know these things? He once said he knew the secrets of the pyramids. He wrote a book on magnetism, very small pamphlet-type book. But, I mean, he knew so many things. How did he know?
God, George, that is the question that has haunted me for the last 27 years. There's been a lot of speculation that somehow... And Latvia is a very mysterious place. I've never been there. I hope to go there one day. But there's all kinds of mediums and psychics and all kinds of there's strange things that go on there. And someone believes that how he got a map from somebody or perhaps these things come to him in dreams and visions. That's kind of what he intimated to Mr. Bullard there, the man that I interviewed there when I first got there. Who owned a gas station there where Ed shopped. And he used to tell him that these things kind of just came to him like writers write songs. And I wonder if it's, you know, a past connection somewhere or he never would reveal his source. But I just believe that he was either inspired by the past or he was able to somehow connect with those earth forces. I think, George, we talked last time, I was always believing that he came over on a boat from Latvia when he was rejected by his girlfriend, but now I have found out he actually walked all through Canada. And I think I had a person call me whose father saw him in Jacksonville, Florida, walking with the divining rod, and the man stopped him and said, "Sir, you lost, can I help you?" Ed turned and looked at him with this mysterious look, and he said, "When I find it, I'll know it." And he just kept walking, George, and he walked all the way down to South Florida where he built Coral Castle.
For some people who aren't aware of Coral Castle, tell us the story of Ed Leitz-Kallman.
Okay. The story begins, in fact, this is the 100th year anniversary. In 1912, Ed was 26 years old. He was sickly as a child.
If I ever get down that way, by the way, I got to go see this place.
Oh, George, you would be here for a month. You can't leave it once.
Still owned by that private family, and they've got tours there still, right?
I'll still have tours. Okay. It's just like when he left it. The bed is still hanging suspended in the wall. The bug catcher for his food is still there. So Ed is sickly as a child. He doesn't get to go out and play, but he is a voracious reader. Well, when he's 26, he falls in love with this girl, Agnes Scuffs. Well, they're engaged to be married. The night before the wedding, and it's my understanding that she didn't even tell him herself. She sent her cousin by there to tell Ed. She said, "I can't explain it. I can't marry you. I'm sorry." Well, Ed is dejected. He leaves Latvia. He goes to Canada, and he stays in a lumbering camp there for about 4 years. He gets deathly ill. At this time, it's 1918. He's left Latvia. He's been gone 6 years. He develops a severe case of tuberculosis. When he walks all the way from Canada down into Florida, he's found on the side of the road by a real estate agent who picks him up. The doctor looks at him the next day. Ed's passed out. The doctor examines him. Now, this medical report is still in Coral Castle. The doctor tells Ed, "I don't know how you've come this far. Your body is eaten up with tuberculosis. You have 4 to 6 months to live. Better get your stuff and gear." Well, Ed smiles and says, "Well, is there a junkyard around here?" And they looked at him puzzled. And he said, "You know, I want to do some things before I go." Well, he goes to a junkyard, George. Again, he gets this witching rod, which is a divining rod, and he starts going out on the land. And the divining rod was to find a water source. And people used to see him calling him Crazy Ed because he had gotten a bicycle from the junkyard with no tires on it. And he would ride around clinking around. You could hear him. And they said, "Well, there goes Crazy Ed on his bicycle." Well, one day he finds this land. He runs back to the real estate man. He says, "I have found the perfect land to build my castle on." Well, they go out and look at it. The real estate man says, "Ed, you have stumbled on the worst plot of land in Florida. There's nothing here, son, but coral stones. And that part of Florida, George, it's about 3 feet or 2 feet of dirt. And the rest of it, 4,000 feet down, is this oolitic limestone. And the geologists believe this limestone has been there for at least 30,000 years. Well, long story short, Ed tells the man, "Look, leave me on the land, come back in 3 weeks. When the man comes back with his wife, the real estate man, they're in their old car, they pull up. There's Ed without his shirt on, and here's a 10-ton, perfectly cut, cubed-looking stone hanging in a pyramid pole suspended by a chain. Well, they think, what's going on here? Ed begins with that stone, George. We don't understand how, first of all, he cut it out of the ground.
Gosh, I would have loved to have witnessed this. You too?
Yeah. Yeah, because how, in other words, imagine if you're sitting on flat land, how do you cut out a 10-ton stone? How do you get underneath it to pry it up, to pull it up for one thing, and then cut it so perfectly? These stones are cut with the precision of eyeglasses, the same as the pyramid stones. So Ed builds this castle, George. The people look at him and they say, and he works from midnight till 6 in the morning. No one could ever, well, I shouldn't say no one because people have criticized me for saying no one ever caught him at work. Then why do you say the children saw him floating these stones at night? So let me back up and say children did see him. They didn't see him. He was inside the castle, but they said that they saw him floating these stones over the top walls of the castle. They couldn't figure out how he did it. Well, he would only work from midnight till 6 in the morning. If you tried to...
So nobody could see him.
Nobody could see him. A lot of people said, well, it's because of the moonlight and the gravity and all that kind of stuff. And he did work with shoes that had iron bottoms on them. He actually went down to the shoemaker and put iron bottoms on these. Well, if you tried to sneak up on him, he would stick up on the wall, and he would look out, and he'd say, I can't work as long as you're out there tonight. And these people would be hunkered down in the woods, George, trying to think, how did he know we're here? Well, once he said, I know you're here, they would leave. And later on, Mr. Bullard asked him, he said, how are you able to know those people are there? And Ed said, the same way that divining rod finds the water. He said, remember this, when water's running underground, it causes vibrations. And the stick, the divining rod, picks up those vibrations. And that's what pulls it down to the ground to show you where the water is. Well, the same way, if you open up your senses, you can feel people's steps coming across there. You can feel their body vibrations. And Mr. Bullard was like, that was way over his head. You know, he couldn't understand that. I think Ed had just developed his senses. You know, remember, he was alone. He was a hermit, had very few friends. All he did was work on this castle. So long story short, he's building the castle. He looks out across the ocean one day when they ask him, why did you build it? And he said, one day my sweet 16 will come from Latvia and she'll marry me here at Coral Castle. Until she does, I'm waiting for Agnes.
And he waited and waited and waited.
And waited all his life. Now, about the year 1936, some people have said it was because there was a subdivision coming, but you know, we've discussed it before. The one of the big theories is that this gravitational force that we've been talking about, this anti-gravity force, actually changes by volcanoes or tsunamis, and actually changes the power source. Well, they believe, because Ed first builds Coral Castle in Florida City. Now, one day, a friend of his who has a logging truck, which is set up to carry these big logs, Ed comes to him and he says, in Florida City, he said, meet me in the morning. We're going to have breakfast, and I want you to do some work for me. The man showed up in the morning for breakfast. Ed fed him, and the man said, what would you like me to do? And Ed said, back your truck up there. He said, I'm going to put that 30-ton stone on the truck, and I'd like for you to leave and come back in an hour. Well, the man was stunned, and he thought, what are you talking about? Well, he came back in an hour. The 30-ton stone was loaded. Ed was sitting on top of the stone, ready to go.
All by himself.
All by himself. No equipment, nothing. Well, one time during this trip, now it took him a year. It's 10 miles away from Florida City to Homestead. So it takes him a year moving each stone by itself. Well, one day the man got curious and he thought, well, I'll sneak up on Ed. So as he left the truck, he smoked a cigarette and put the cigarette out, and he low crawled around kind of like an alligator to see where Ed was and to catch him working. Ed was already standing there with the stone loaded, ready to go. This was in like 30 minutes.
That's amazing.
So they move the castle now to Homestead. Ed puts it back up, erects now a 40-foot stone that weighs about 30 tons, along with a Polaris telescope, along with a moon dial in the north wall, which there's not another moon dial in the world. He can actually get up on the wall there and tell the time at night by the moonlight. He has a sundial also that's accurate within 2 minutes.
Did he have any apparatus or equipment out there?
The only thing he had, George, was an old 10-ton hoist. And here's the question. On top of that hoist, there was a black box with a steel cable running down it.
What was in the black box?
That's what we'd love to know. After Ed died, thieves came through there, and for 3 days before people really knew about it, they robbed all this place. The black box was gone. Most of Ed's tools were gone. A lot of his personal effects were gone. Now, Ed could have destroyed that black box once he got done building the castle to secure his secret. Now, there are photographs that Ed took of him working there that always show him using the 10-ton hoist. So it's like he wants to fool you into making you think he's done it with this hoist. But the problem with that theory, George, is the 10-ton hoist won't lift the 30-ton stone. So if that's the case, how was he able to lift that 30-ton stone? You couldn't do it with a 10-ton hoist.
Well, plus the thing was on like a little tripod, wasn't it?
That's correct. So there's no way, even with the techniques and the mechanics of the pulleys, it would not have held the weight of the stone.
How big were some of the biggest stones?
The biggest stone is the north stone on the north wall that weighs 30 tons.
30 tons. It's cut out, right?
Correct.
And it moved, right? That moved from one location to the next.
Right. Right.
That's amazing.
And the walls are 8 foot high, about 3 feet thick, and they each weigh about probably 4 to 6 tons.
When he was in Latvia, did he build anything out there like this?
George, that's a good question. I have talked to people who have gone back to Latvia and tried. They can't even find the original house that he lived in.
Did people even know him?
They knew him. He does have one cousin left who's probably 80 years old by now. He he didn't really know anything about Ed. He knows that he's related to him, but there's no foundations there. There's nothing. We know that Ed worked in the quarries there, and he learned his stone cutting techniques there in the stone quarries. But as far as him building anything there, no.
I mean, on your book, Waiting for Agnes, is a picture of Ed in front of like a crescent moon, it looks like, right?
Right.
Is that what that is? It's huge.
Yeah, 18 tons.
And he moved that himself.
Moved it himself. And George, I had a an artist build me a replica of that, and he said to get that crescent onto the square, the T that it's sitting on, the way it's balanced, he actually went down there and took the measurements on it, and he said you would need laser technology to cut that and balance it the way it's balanced.
Joe, did In Search Of come up with any theories on how they think he built this, how he moved the stones?
No. In the film, if you watch it, and it's on YouTube.
They just lay it out there.
They just, yeah. And they show a crane and a bulldozer trying to move a 10-ton boulder cut very much like Ed's first 10-ton, and all they can do is drag it, George.
All right, let's tie Elite Skullnin's projects in with Captain Kathy's grid. There's got to be a tie-in.
Yeah. I believe that Ed had understood that anti-gravity theory long before it was ever known here. He understood, and I believe, George, that with that divining rod, that simple little tool, he was looking for the source of water. And he knew that water, like in the batteries, that's what charges everything. That's where your power grid is going to come from. Because in a lot of the places, even like the pyramid Stonehenge, they've all proved that some places, and those that are erected great stone places, they do have a water source. And I believe that Ed came along there knowing, and if you notice, George, when he wrote his book, Magnetic Current, he said, the first part of it, he says, when you're reading this, he says, look east, and all the description you will find about magnetic current, it will be just as good for your electricity. Then he gives the location, and I'm going to read this here. Following is the result of my 2 years experiment with magnets at Rock Gate, 17 miles southwest from Miami, Florida, between the 25th and 26th latitude and 80th and 81st longitude west. Now, these are the same type mathematical equations that Kathy used in his grid. You've got to know longitude, latitude. You've got to know light, mass, and gravity. And once you put this mathematical formula together, that somehow equates where your energy lines fall. It's like a surveyor, George, going out with his compass saying, hey, here's the line, and you mark it. That it's very difficult in my mind to try to put it in layman's terms of how you find this grid. But I'm convinced that with Ed speaking in those terms, and how did a guy with a fourth grade education know about, you know, longitude west? I mean, I've lived all my life here, and I still don't understand these terms as far as how they relate to this grid.
Did he live out there at Coral Castle, or did he just build it like for people to look at?
No, he lived it. There's a tower there. When you go in there, it's a two-story tower, and it's just made out of stone blocks, and it's very, very has a stone floor. He basically had a little crystal radio set in there. I think he had a little power generator from his perpetual motion holder that he actually used to light. So little tiny light in there, nothing real bright, but he actually lived in there. And he worked most of the time, George. I think the man only slept, if he worked from 12 till 6 in the morning, he only slept about 3 hours.
Man, he had a lot of energy, Joe. We'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM, and we'll talk more about Edward Leeds Skullnin. Well, next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Joe Bullard, but when we come back, I want to get into the science behind Ed Leeds Skullnin. What did he do and how did he do it? Let's get Joe to guess on that when we come right back. Joe Bullard, tell us if you know what the secret of the science was behind Edward Leeds Skullnin's ability.
George, I think it all goes back to the things that Kathy mentioned, that term geometric harmonics. I think it's due to the light and the gravity and the mass, and that Ed had found the perfect place where the lines of the longitude and the latitude met, and these places that are around the Great Pyramid, Stonehenge, where the Incas and the Mayans all converge. I think these lines, I think that magnetic energy is concentrated in those areas, and I believe that Ed was able to manipulate those forces. And I was thinking about this as you just mentioned that question, and I remembered that in the Casey writings on Atlantis, when he was asked in a trance, well, how did they move these stones of the Great Pyramid? And in this trance, Casey said, by the control manipulation of the cosmic forces, this causes iron to float in water. Also, stone floats in the air. Now, these cosmic forces, George, have to do with the light, the mass, and the gravity. And basically, Ed would call them magnets. That's the simplicity of it. When you take the higher-powered magnets and the lower part and you push them up, you've got anti-gravity. And I believe that in these areas, and that's why he moved the castle from Florida City to Homestead, because the power source there was beginning to diminish. It could have been a seismic interruption. Something happened, and he knew that and moved that castle because he was in tune with these forces, and it has to be done with anti-gravity.
Well, he knew something, Joe. Does anybody else possess this knowledge?
Not to my knowledge. Ed is the only person. And you know, George, when I first began this journey and I wrote the book and I sent it to NBC, CBS, and all those places saying, you know, why don't you guys feature? This was before Coral Castle was ever talked about. Now you look at it, you know, and it's all over the internet and everything. This was back in the beginning days when I was just trying to get the word out. And I'll never forget an NBC producer called me back and said, you know, son, you really shouldn't go around saying that this man understood the secret of the Great Pyramid because you have no proof of that. I thought, you know, come to Coral Castle, look at what this man has done. Who else in the world has proved it? And yet, George, these people are so blind. You know, they will not accept the truth.
No, I guess they won't. Now, Skeldon, he died in 1951, didn't he?
December 7th.
Took his secrets with him. Why didn't he share it with anybody?
I believe, George, that one of the statements Ed made one time, and Mr. Bullard had asked him this, a lot of people did, they said, you know,
we're talking about another Mr. Bullard, right?
Yes, I'm sorry, the J.T. Bullard who owned the gas station. It was funny, we both had the last same
no
name.
No relation.
No, well, probably distant. We all came from Ireland, you know, drunks and riders. And I'm sure that we all came on the same boat. It was just funny that when I went up there and I saw the sign, I was like, good God, how can all these Bullards be down here? And also one of the – now, people have written to me, George, I'll get back to that question in a minute, have written to me and said, hey, you know, we're tired of hearing these kids floating this, you know, seeing these stones float. An actual eyewitness was a Bullard. He was a truck driver, and later as a child, he grew up in that area. He was one of the kids who witnessed Ed floating the stones over the castle. And I've spoken with his daughter.
What did he say?
He said, we were children. We came up. It was middle of the night. We had snuck out of the house to go see Mr. Ed, the Uncle Ed, they called him, because we knew he'd be working. Well, Ed knew the kids would be there, and he loved children. And the theory is that he allowed these children to see
to kind of peek over, right?
Exactly. So he said they were on one side of the castle. It was dark. They couldn't see anything except they saw the form, the dark form. It was kind of a half moonlit night, he said, so we could see fairly well. And we saw these stones just lift up, go over the top of the wall, and disappear into the castle.
Float up. Said,
float up, right, just like a balloon. And he said, we must have watched three or four of these. And he said, we never heard. He said, sometimes we could almost hear like a humming sound, like an electronic motor. Some kind of vibration.
It's the only thing, Joe, that explains how they could have moved. I mean, if there were 25 guys there, you know, you could think, well, maybe they help move these a little bit, but not a guy by himself.
Right.
And there were never any witnesses that said there were helpers there, right?
There was never any helpers. You know, he was fanatic about, you know, nobody watching him work. Nobody. And, George, there are documents down at Coral Castle that people, you know, everybody said, when Ed dies, nobody's going to believe this story. So they went around to all the witnesses and had them sign documents. Ed had no help.
Well, isn't it strange he would write a little book on magnetics and, you know, leave it like that? And I remember reading it, and he said, not every object that has to be metal is magnetized. It could be anything.
That's correct.
So he believed that it could be stone, piece of paper, anything could be a magnet.
Exactly. Anything could be done that way. Yes, it's because it's all about electrons and molecules, and just he said the magnets themselves are the power.
Could that be the book he wrote? Could that be the playbook to Coral Castle?
I think it is. And I think there's one other piece of the puzzle that's missing. And since there'll be new people listening tonight, I'll mention this. There was, well, in the South, we call them croaker sacks because we used to throw bullfrogs in them, and they croaked, and so that's what we called them. In the North, they call them burlap bags. There was actually a burlap bag, George, in the top of his tower there are beams. He had a burlap bag up there. Mr. Buller told me one time he watched him working on it. He was actually sewing these little, Mr. Buller said, almost looked like hieroglyphic symbols, and they looked like some places where there was the little dipper sewn in and everything. I believe that he left behind a map of what he had done there at Coral Castle, and he left it on something that nobody would pay attention to, and it was that burlap bag, and he kept it up there over that beam. And I remember talking to one of the guides one year, and she told me this weird-looking man came into the castle one day, and he did a tour, and he came back, and he said, I want to purchase that burlap bag that's hanging from the beams in there. And she said, she laughed, and she said, well, sir, that's part of the castle. You can't buy that. He said, oh, okay. Well, he left. Well, she went on vacation, and she came back in 2 weeks, George, and she just did a normal routine check. She was the manager, and for some reason, she looked up. The burlap bag was gone.
He took it.
Oh,
he didn't even buy it. He stole it. Did
Nobody
ever talk about aliens or ETs?
Yes.
What did he say?
Many times Mr. Bullard and him had conversations. JT went over to visit him all the time, and he said at the time of Roswell, Ed saved all of those newspaper clippings. He knew all about it. And the minute that they came out and said, oh, it's a weather balloon, Mr. Bullard said, Ed looked at him and winked, and he said, JT, don't believe that. Mr. Bullard said, well, what do you mean, Ed? What do you know about it? And he said, just trust me. He said, those people know what weather balloons are. He said, that's no weather balloon.
How do we know Ed was of this planet?
George, could I share something with you?
I hope so.
Okay, that I received a phone call tonight that knocked me out of my chair.
What happened?
Okay. My friend that I was telling you about in Australia, he is a Coral Castle and a Coast to Coast fanatic, just like me. He calls me up and he says, Joe, I've just checked on some research I've been doing, and I just called this man and confirmed this story. Here's the story. Back in 1952, now Ed dies in 51.
He dies in 51.
A young man, very intelligent, who lived around in the area of Coral Castle. Now, this call is coming from Australia. It's a little garbled. I'm having trouble catching the communication. That came in tonight, just before the show.
All right.
He said, I see you going on the coast, and I wanted to tell you this story. So he said, there's a young man, high school. He's walking along the beach there, and he's thinking about the magnificent things of the earth, you know, how we're here, how the birds fly, the trees, God, the sky. What are we doing here?
Things we ask ourselves every day.
All the time. He looks up, George, and he comes face to face with this, he called it a humanoid being. It is dressed in what we call a space suit, a tight-fitting suit of a greenish-gray color. And he's startled because it's humanoid. It has human features, but you can tell it's definitely not of this planet. The long fingers and everything like they always describe. And this being looks at him and says, "Son," in perfect English, "you have a lot of questions on your mind. Go ahead and ask me these questions, and I will answer them." Well, the young man was startled, and he couldn't speak, and the being said, "Yes, don't worry. I'm reading all of your thoughts. I'm here to help you. I'm not here to harm you. Ask me anything, and I'll answer it." Well, he put the young man at ease, George. They started talking. About an hour into the conversation, for some reason, I believe the young man brought up Coral Castle. The being said to him, "Yes, we know all about Ed. He is a returning spirit. He was once a priest, I believe he said, of Thoros or Thore. Have you ever heard this story, George?"
No.
Okay. He said, "He is a returning spirit of Atlantis, where he was a priest in this some kind of hierarchy. He has returned at this time. He is reliving those things that he learned before. They can come to him in, like, dreams and visions. And he's reliving the time that he had before. And these things that he's discovering, he has known before."
So he might not have been an E.T., but he might have been an Atlantean, huh?
Exactly. And, George, what blew me away was Ed, years ago, had intimated to Mr. Buller, to J.T., he had talked to him about dreams and visions about Atlantis. He'd read the book by Ignatius Donnelly. He'd read all these things. And, you know, he talked about these things. And when Mr. Buller relayed the story to me, I thought, I was afraid to put this in my book because I thought, well, Mr. Buller's getting a little older. Maybe he's just made this. It's such a wild story. But I thought, what the heck? I went ahead and put it in the book. George, it's exactly the plot that I used in my book. The plot that Ed is returning back, that he has found this secret library under the Sphinx, and he's going back now and discovering what he knew in the time before.
He's reincarnated.
Exactly. And here is and so my friend in Australia called, and he's a great documenter. He called the man, and George, I've got to check on this. He's either written a book or this is from his memoirs. We had to cut off because I was studying to do this show, but he promised me that he contacted the man. The man verified this story exactly as I'm telling it to you, and I'm hoping that I can get a hold of the memoirs and possibly talk to this man because I think there's more on it, and he just didn't have time to tell me.
Is it possible that Ed Leeds Skolnin, you know, reincarnated, was from Atlantis, knew the secrets then, probably, you know, moved on to Egypt, helped build the pyramids, and here he is doing it all over again?
It makes sense to me. Where else do you get that knowledge from when you've got a fourth grade education here?
Why doesn't some kind of anthropologist go and investigate Coral Castle and come up with a theory of how he moved these blocks?
George, I can't even get the governor of Florida to go down and recognize Coral Castle, much less I would let.
That's crazy. The old governor that was around when Ed was there apparently would sit at the table with him.
Right.
Yeah.
And yes. And at the time,
I read your book.
Yeah, I can tell you did. Yeah, and he'd sit around and tell him how to raise taxes and the governor would just die laughing. You know, but yes, that was how it was in the old days. But I think now they're scared to death that somebody's going to reinvent that perpetual motion holder down there, you know, because Ed was going to give away electricity like Tesla. I think they're afraid of Coral Castle. But it should be. One of my readers said a great thing. Why don't they make it an institution? Why don't they make it a place of learning? George, our engineers at the University of Florida don't even go down. They don't even know about Coral Castle.
Isn't that bizarre?
Like I say, the only time I talk about it is with you.
Here's a guy who somehow knew that sound or resonance and magnetics could move huge objects. And, you know, we could use it as a propulsion system, probably free energy, but they don't want free energy, Joe.
Of course not. Of course not.
You know, they want to charge us for everything.
Right.
Or an anti-gravity car that would move without fuel, just with the power grid of this planet.
Right.
Wouldn't that be novel?
Right. What Kathy's talking about, too, is, and it's kind of hard for me to get all this stuff in, it's so deep, but he's saying the faster you go with light, the more you slow time down. You can actually change time.
Well, that's what Einstein said.
That's right. That's what these propulsion things are doing. You know, they're going through time. And we could do the same thing.
What would you say to Ed Leetskolnin if you had the ability to talk to him?
Oh, my God. I would just say...
Show me, Ed. How'd you do it?
You know what, George? People have told me that before, and you know, I'm not sure I want to know. I'm really not
sure. Yes, you do, Joe. Come on.
George, it's the mystery that keeps me absolutely... If I knew it, George, I'm afraid... It'd be like everything else. It'd be like smoking a pipe or lighting a cigar.
I know. I think it would lead to more questions from you. You know, if he moved these with sound resonance, the next question is, how did you develop it? How did you know about it? How does that work?
Yeah.
And, I mean, it would go on and on and on. This could be one of the greatest discoveries of mankind.
George, it would unlock the secrets of the universe. We have it at our fingertips.
He tapped into the secrets of the universe.
Right. And a little guy from, and here's the thing, a little guy from Latvia moves over here, does something phenomenal that nobody else has done in history, and you get some movie studio guy on NBC that says, oh, he, you know, you can't make that claim.
Jeez. Did he have any newspaper coverage of
no.
that era?
Oh, excuse me. I'm sorry. Yes. He had extensive, he was famous in that area. Everybody,
I mean, but did they ever try to theorize how he did this?
No. Back in those days, everyone was kind of polite. Ed did not want to share that secret, and they just didn't bother him about it. They just accepted it that he was friendly and cool, and he was, you know, reclusive. When you started asking him those questions, he'd blink at you and smile, and he'd say, I'm sorry, but I've got some laundry to do.
How bizarre.
And he would never tell you. And so they finally gave up. They couldn't catch him at work. He wouldn't tell them anything. And, you know, but he was such a lovable guy. You know, George, they said he would take the old bicycle with no tires and ride up to the movie theater and stand outside and watch the silent films on his bicycle because he didn't want to have the money to pay to go in.
Everybody liked him?
I loved him.
Joe, stay with us. We're going to come back. Final hour here on Coast to Coast AM. We'll take phone calls with you as we talk about Coral Castle and also about anti-gravity. So Joe Bullard is next on Coast to Coast AM, and you can always email me at george@coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back in a moment to take your calls.